funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Texas is technically the second fastest growing state, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. North Dakota, with its booming oil and gas fields, is first. But to be clear, more than three times as many people moved to Texas between 2010 and 2015 as the entire population of North Dakota, which is to say there are lots of newly minted Texans among us. To help those recent additions understand how Texas works, TexasMonthly.com editor Andrea Valdez has written a handbook called How to Be a Texan, The Manual. We invited her here to talk about what's in it and to see whether you might add or delete anything if you were writing a book of your own. Andrea, welcome to Think.
Hi.
You're originally from Houston. Do you remember when you realized that Texas had its own culture almost on par with a national identity?
Yeah, so I'm from Houston, and my parents both traveled a lot when they were younger. And my mom would tell me a lot of stories about going abroad to Europe and, you know, parts of Eastern Europe. And she would say that when she was out there, she would often, you know, say, people would ask her, where are you from? And she'd say, I'm from Texas. Hmm. And it was just at that moment I realized that Texas is a place that for a lot of people in the world is as easy to identify as America as a place.
Yeah, if you said you were from Rhode Island, they might not really know what to make of that.
Right, yeah. But, you know, Texas people are familiar with the shape. They're familiar with the identity. It's got a big personality.
What do you think the rest of the country thinks of Texas?
Well, I mean, I think that, like I said, it does have a big personality, and there are a lot of big personalities that are from here, and a lot of, you know, big iconic things that are associated with Texas. There's the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. There's, you know, Houston, we have a problem, and NASA. There's, you know, obviously some really big name politicians that are from Texas, including, you know, at least two presidents and or three presidents, I guess, if you want to also claim George H.W. Bush. And that called it Texas home. And so I think that there's a lot of preconceived notions in the nation about what Texas is and who's from here.
Well, this is really interesting, you know, with regard to those preconceived notions, because you don't necessarily try in this book to knock down the stereotypes. In your words, you lean into them. What made you decide to do that?
That's right. So I do talk about how, you know, I work at Texas Monthly and have been there for almost 10 years now. And a big part of working at Texas Monthly has caused me to really examine Texas through a nuanced view. You know, of course, growing up as a Texan in Houston, you know, a lot of what I have learned has been, you know, Texas history. There's kind of an indoctrination from a pretty young age, you know, in seventh grade, taking a Texas history course as part of the required curriculum here. And so, you know, of course, you have a lot of, you know, idea of what Texas history is. The Alamo is obviously looms giant in everyone's mind here. Giant also is, you know, something that I think people know about and is very connected to the Texas identity and, you know, kind of the rough Wild West. But, you know, as I, like I said, worked at Texas Monthly, you know, we are also have giant urban cores here, and that is also a big part of the Texas identity and is increasingly, you know, kind of where people live here in Texas. And so I understand that there is, you know, some kind of warts in all parts of Texas history, and I didn't want to discount that, you know, when people come to the book and recognize that that exists. But like I say in the book, I lean into the stereotypes because, you know, we kind of are the sum of all those parts, and a lot of that is a connection to the land, a connection to our food, a connection to, you know, the places that are important to us. And so you have to talk about those places in order to really talk about being a Texan.
I didn't move to Texas until I was 13, which is to say I never took Texas history, and I always feel a little bit sheepish stumbling through a recitation of the Texas Pledge because I did not learn it in elementary school. I do know that it starts with honor the Texas flag. What can you tell us about how we should display and handle that flag?
I do have, there are rules, and those rules are part of the Texas Constitution for how to display the flag. And I, you know, lay those out in great detail in the book. And there's this one myth that the Texas flag can is the only flag that can hang as high as the United States flag. And that's not true, though I'm sure a lot of Texans would like for it to be true. But I'd say that, you know, as far as hanging the flag, there are rules to it. So make sure you follow those. And I say hang it proudly.
How often does it get hung upside down?
It doesn't get hung upside down as much as it get. Well, I suppose it depends on if you're flying it vertically or horizontally. And I think probably if you're flying it, you know, horizontally, it probably does. You know, the people will put the wrong stripe on the bottom. But it's, you know, obviously the blue star goes to the top if you're hanging it vertically. And so I think people know that. And in fact, you know, I do keep an eye out to kind of see, you know, who out there is doing it. And of course, the Texas Capitol is always doing it right. One would hope.
You know, their regional accents are fading all over America. But if fewer Texans have a drawl today, we still have special ways of communicating. Are we, for example, the only state with farm-to-market roads?
No, I believe there are farm-to-market roads in, and I don't say this in the book, but in one other state, and I can't remember what it is right now, but it was a big part of Texas's evolution as an urban you know, its continued evolution as an urban state. The farm-to-market road system was put into place to connect these smaller rural areas to, you know, towns and cities. And so it's obviously, if you drive around Texas, a very important visual landmark. You know, I think everyone who's driven around Texas, and a lot of times even in the middle of cities, you'll see these farm-to-market roads, you know, just in the middle of each city. And it's kind of a holdover from, you know, when some of these cities were smaller in size and those farm-to-market roads and their signage was, you know, very important. And now, obviously, as sprawl happens, those farm-to-market roads kind of become larger larger, you know, byways and highways. So,
yeah, I think it's kind of fun to see them in the middle of a city because it's a reminder of how much we've grown.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I do say in the book also that the farm to market road is, you know, something that, like I said, is here. But there's also the ranch to market road. And that is something that ranches, you know, wanting to differentiate from farms, you know, they have that. So there's our roads, too, as well.
What does a good Texan say when asked what kind of Coke she wants?
A Dr. Pepper, of course.
Yeah, because people are baffled by this idea. You know, there are parts of the country where we call it soda, parts of the country where we call it pop. But here in Texas, things with fizz, particularly brown things with fizz, are just Cokes.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, that's actually something else that I didn't really recognize was you know, of this place until I was out of it. When I was in grad school, I lived in the Chicago area. I went to Northwestern University. And one of the things is, of course, I noticed that, you know, people from all over in a, you know, big university would say things like pop and, you know, soda. And I would ask for a Coke and people would give me a Coke. And I thought, well, no, I want a Dr. Pepper. And so I didn't realize that that was a thing until I was out of the state.
Yeah, there are lots of expressions like that, that they sound just like the way everybody speaks until you go somewhere else and you say something like good enough for government work and people look at you
right.
with a strange eye.
Yeah. And another one that when I was outside of Texas that I really recognized was just from here was fixin' to. I was, again, this was when I was in Chicago and I was telling a friend that I was fixing to go do something. And she was like, fixing to, what are you fixing? And I was very perplexed. And I thought, how does everyone not use this phrase? It's so fantastic.
The other Texas phrase that I learned when I arrived here was put that up instead of put it away.
The first time
somebody suggested that I put something up, I looked around and said, up where?
That's funny. You know, that's not in the book, but I didn't think about that. And yes, absolutely. You know, put your toys up.
Yeah, exactly.
Heard that one from my mom growing up a lot.
Right. El Paso is the only place I've ever lived where the freeway access roads are called gateways. What are they called elsewhere in the state?
So I grew up in Houston and they call it the feeder road. Mm-hmm. And I remember a friend of mine when we were in high school thought that the feeder road was, in fact, just one long road. and it's not. It's just any highway access is called the feeder road. And so you'll tune into I'm sure Houstonians know when you tune into the traffic report, you know, the feeder road is something that comes up pretty frequently. So
I don't use the phrase might could except in jest, but I'll confess I really love to hear it from somebody who employs it completely without irony.
Yes. So my husband is actually kind of the inspiration for the might could and the used to could.
Used to could.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, I was an English major and, you know, obviously, you know, just doing some writing, words are important to me. And hearing those things, at first I kind of thought, oh, it's so grammatically incorrect. But after a couple of times, you find it to be very charming and you think, well, I know what you're saying. I follow you.
Right. Spanglish is also an important component of life in Texas. What are some of your favorite expressions?
So growing up, again, you know, it's my parents, you know, we're Mexican-American and, you know, my parents would sometimes, you know, code switch, the go back and forth from, you know, English to Spanish. And, you know, the one that I remember hearing a lot growing up is scúchale, which is kind of it's slang for scooch over. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I heard a lot growing up. And then, you know, just my mom would call me mijita, you know, which is my little girl, my son, my daughter, my son. And, you know, like just saying things like ¿cómo está?, you know, and, you know, if you're talking about, I mean, obviously the cars are, I think, something that, you know.
Troca, carro.
Yeah. And those are, you know, you just come up with these different slang terms. So
in terms of expressions, that dog won't hunt, or you have that dog will hunt. I guess you can use it in the affirmative or the negative.
Right. Yeah. The expressions are one of my favorite parts of being Texan. You know, Dan Rather used them a lot when he would, you know, deliver the news. He had all these really wonderful, colorful expressions that he would, you know, either make up or had like maybe just in this deep well of knowledge of them. But a few of them I heard in real life as I was reporting out the book and, you know, thought to myself, this absolutely has to go in. One of which was my husband's grandparents. You know, they're from West Texas. And at one point, his grandmother was talking about someone who was kind of stingy. And she was saying, he's just so tight, he squeaks. And I thought, I mean, it was a real life example happening in front of my eyes. And there's another one. And it's, you know, it's a little more colorful. I'm not sure if I can say it's about being dry.
We'll leave that one behind.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I encourage you to take a look. I mean, like I said, Texans do speak colorfully.
And smells like money. I didn't think about that being a Texas expression, but of course it is.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, some of these expressions are not, you know, individual to Texas, but, you know, I think that saying them all at some point, you know, when you add them all up, it's part of what makes, you know, you talk like a Texan. But yeah, if you're from West Texas or even from Houston, you know, you understand that, you know, the smell of oil smells like money. And sometimes, you know, for people that are in the agriculture business, if you're, say, in the panhandle, you know, cow patties might smell like money to you.
You have a great section of the book where you explain how to pronounce the names of places in Texas. My sister went to UT and she had mm-hmm. lived in El Paso. And so somebody told her to go to Guadalupe and she had no idea that that was the same word as what in El Paso was Guadalupe.
Right. And in fact, you know, I'm someone who doesn't prefer to shorten it myself. But I know that a lot of people do. But yeah, I'm with you and your sister and the El Pasoans, and I want to say the whole word.
And you got Waxahachie right, so thank you for that.
Yes,
people in North Texas appreciate that.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I know that I won't lie. Why I had said Waxahachie until someone corrected me. So you learn along the way.
My guest is Andrea Valdez. She is editor of TexasMonthly.com and author of the new book, How to Be a Texan, The Manual. If you want to talk about a favorite Texas expression or tradition, give us a call. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can tweet the show at our new Twitter site, Twitter handle, I should say, that is at KERATHINK. Or you can call, did I already say call? Or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
Hey, baby, ¿qué pasó? No que yo era un vato. Hey, baby, ¿qué pasó? No me dejes de ser morto. Come on, baby, ven acá. Quiero ver tu cara linda. Quiero ver que te quiero.
That was the Texas Tornado singing Hey Baby, ¿Qué Pasó? This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd speaking this hour with TexasMonthly.com editor Andrea Valdez, author of the new book, How to Be a Texan, The Manual. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. We can't talk about being Texan without talking about barbecue. Last fall, I sat down with Aaron Franklin, who runs arguably the most popular barbecue joint in the state, if not the Southwest. He's famous for cooking meat nearly 24 hours a day. I asked him to walk us through the process.
We'll start at midnight. The brisket guys kind of starting to finish up for the night. Briskets are starting to come off. They're going to rest for a long time. About 12:30 a.m. at the restaurant, the first guy shows up, and he's there to cook ribs. So say if it's a Saturday, we're going to get beef ribs on about 12:48. Give or take 12 seconds.
It's really that. Is it that precise?
It's pretty dialed in.
Yeah.
And, you know, about an hour later, pork ribs are going to go on. They're going to cook. The briskets are going to rest. Things are going to start moving. Turkeys go on. Turkeys come off. Pork butts come off. All that kind of stuff. Sausage goes on. All the while getting the front part ready for service. You know, we kind of like organize the warmers and decide what we think we're going to have, what our yields are going to be for lunch. Start mixing the potato salad. Start mixing the slaw. Cooking the beans. All that stuff. Start trimming and rubbing meat to go on that morning for the next day. So yeah, it's a well lubricated machine at this point, hopefully, unless something bad happens. And yeah, there's always something going on. It's a 24-hour process.
You are really big on wood. There's a lot in the book about certain kinds of wood. What is so great about post oak?
Post oak is kind of the indigenous wood that we have here in Central Texas. It's what makes, in my opinion, German Czech barbecue, which is Central Texas barbecue. Mm-hmm. It's got a really nice heat curve. It doesn't burn too hot. It doesn't burn too fast. You can really get a good feel for it. It's also got a really straight grain, so that helps with us to be able to stack up our firewood for airflow. The size of our cookers and the way that our barbecue pits actually work is more from convection than actual radiant heat. So the post oak really helps out a lot with that stuff.
When you order barbecue, what should people ask for if they're never going to cook anything themselves, but they want the very best?
Well, it depends on where you're at. But if you're at our place or most places here in Central Texas, it's going to be more of a German Czech market kind of style thing. So that means that you can pretty much order stuff by the pound. And that's really there because it's interactive. The customer gets to see what's getting cut. The guy that's cutting it, it's not just blindly spitting out of a kitchen. It's like, it's there. Like, what do you want? Ooh, give me one more rib. Oh, can I get that piece right there? You can put stuff up on the counter, kind of talk about it. You know, we spent a lot of time cooking this and we're certainly going to take our time serving it. I think you could go to a great number of barbecue joints and get an amazing meal. I think a lot of times at barbecue, you know, obviously some barbecue is a lot better than other barbecue. There's no doubt there. But, you know, it has to do a lot with the experience. It's a cultural thing. You're hanging out, you got your friends, you got your family. And a lot of times that's kind of maybe what it's more about. There's a lot of barbecue places that I like to go to, not necessarily because the food's great, or, you know, I feel confident that it's going to be the best meal of my life, but because it's cool, because it looks neat. You go there and you get a certain feeling. It's nostalgic. You get to look at fires. You get to look at this old building. This guy that, you know, you really respect, that you think is just the neatest guy in the world, is actually the guy that's cutting the meat. You know, maybe it's that. Maybe it's that the food is really, really good. So I think there's a lot of things at play there. It's not just the food. It's kind of the whole experience that goes in there.
That was an interview we did with Aaron Franklin on Think last October. Today, my guest is TexasMonthly.com editor Andrea Valdez, author of the new book, How to Be a Texan, The Manual. Andrea, what do real Texans eat when they're not eating barbecue?
Not much else. No. A lot of Tex-Mex, I'd say, is probably the other really big regional cuisine here. I certainly know that I grew up eating a lot of Tex-Mex.
I really love tamales, and I buy them every year at Christmas. I have never attempted to make my own because everyone I know who does says it's just a mountain of work. Is it worth it?
Yes, it is. Just like anything that takes time and effort, typically the result is something that's wonderful. We make tamales every year in my household. Not only did I grow up with that tradition, my mom is one of seven, and the siblings every year between Christmas and Thanksgiving, we get together and you know, make dozens and dozens. I mean, you know, up to 70, 80, 90 dozen together. And it's just a wonderful family tradition. But then it's a tradition that I extended into my adult life and is something that I typically do annually with a group of my friends. In fact, I think maybe 2 years ago, we made more than 1,100 tamales, and it was an all-day affair. But I think, I mean, you know, you freeze them, you keep them, you eat them all year. It's a reminder of a good day that you had and just the hard work that you did. And yeah, I'd say it's worth the payoff.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to the phones now and speak with Cynthia in Irving. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. I wanted to ask Andrea about pronunciation.
Yeah.
Of the word bio or bayou. In Houston, when I grew up in Houston, we always said like Buffalo Bio, Braves Bio.
I grew up in Houston too, and I have to say I say bayou. I mean, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule there, but I do wonder if it's a matter of maybe where in Houston you grew up. And yeah, I grew up pretty close to Braves Bayou, actually. I know that people say bayou and bayou.
We have a tweet here to @KERAThink from Albert, who wants to know if we've talked about homecoming mums. We have not. And Albert says, I believe that is unique to our state. This is something that really takes people by surprise if they are from anywhere else in the U.S.
Yeah, and that is another tradition that is one of those things where I didn't recognize that that was something that was unique to Texas. Growing up, of course, I had a homecoming mom when, you know, it was homecoming time, and I knew there was a few girls and their parents who would get together and make them, and they've become giant. I mean, they were big when I was in high school, but, you know, sometimes they seem as though they weigh as much as the girl who's wearing them, so...
We have an email from Chris in Dallas who says, my Dallas-bred daughter recently went to college in New Jersey. Despite growing up on the internet, her classmates could not believe that she'd never ridden a horse, did not own a gun, and had never been anywhere near an oil well. But they loved it when she said, y'all.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I talk about in the book a little bit is that if you're from here or have been here or grew up here long enough, you go outside of the state and people do ask you, you know, well, did you ride a horse to school? And there are kids in Texas who admittedly have ridden horses to school, but I'd say probably the vast majority of us did not.
They're riding Uber these days.
That's right.
We have an email from Esther in Frisco who says, I grew up on the border calling sugared fried tortillas buñuelos, but when I moved to Central Texas in college, they called them sopapillas. Do you have any insight?
So that's interesting because, you know, I ate sopapillas growing up, but to me, I was like the fried dough that you, you know, would dip in honey. So yeah, I mean, to me, those are two different things.
I guess it all depends on who's making them and how they fix them for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have to challenge, Andrea, your big hair entry, because we always talk about this, but I don't think it's a thing, and it hasn't been for like 20 years.
That's fair. But here's my rebuttal, is that big hair is definitely something that's part of the identity here. Yeah. I would say that Ann Richards, I believe, in fact, at one point had named a certain day of the year. I'd have to go and take a look at what day it was. But, you know, it was a day to celebrate big hair. And, you know, she very famously had big hair. And the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders have very famously had, you know, wonderfully, you know, big tresses. And so I'd say that, yes, that probably the average person's hair is not as big as it may have been once upon a time, but it is still pretty inextricably linked to our culture. And when you do it, it is fabulous.
And we will be all over it if it comes back in style. There's no question, right?
Exactly. No one will know how to do it quite like we can.
Exactly. Let's go back to the phones. This time we have Jason on the line in Dallas. Hey, Jason.
Hi, yes.
Hi, go right ahead.
My question was, tamales in Texas seem to have a dense yellow corn, and some of the ones I've had in California and other places, it's a looser or it's a white corn, and I was wondering if there's something unique about tamales in Texas that developed over time or if that's a traditional Mexican style.
Yeah, I think that it's a pretty traditional Tex-Mex style, actually. But yeah, there are all sorts of different ways of preparation. I've had tamales that have been, you know, wrapped in banana leaves, and you know, the ones that we make are wrapped in corn husks. And yeah, the white corn versus the yellow corn. So I think it is kind of regional and specific to Texas. You know, that you typically see, you know, the, you know, yellow corn, and you see it in the corn husks versus the banana leaf.
Juneteenth is coming up in a few weeks here, and it's an interesting celebration that is unique to Texas. Its origins are joyful on the one hand and really shameful on the other.
Yeah, so on June 19th in 1865, there was an announcement, a proclamation, that was finally saying that slavery had ended, and it was coming, you know, more than 2 years after that had been, the Emancipation Proclamation had been made. And so it, again, is joyful because the news was making it to Texas, but like you said, there is, you know, it was a shame that it was taking so long to actually get here and be enacted.
What have you learned about superstitions in Texas for finding water and making it rain? You've met people who are very well educated and sophisticated who still sort of don't want to mess with the rain gods.
Yeah, so I'm sure, you know, people remember, I mean, we had a very severe drought a few years ago, and Texas obviously goes through periods of severe drought. And the city of Llano had employed someone to do some water dousing. And water dousing is a technique that you use. You use certain tools to try and find water. You walk over areas with these tools. And when the tools, you know, do certain things, I mean, there's something like a Y rod, which it looks exactly like how it sounds. It's this, you know, Y shaped, you know, it's either a rod or it's, you know, a stick or branch or something. And if it moves or twitches or bends, it's supposed to indicate that there's water at that spot. And this has been a method that has been employed for a very, very long time. And it's not necessarily specific to Texas, but being that Texas is a place where drought visits us, unfortunately, too often, is something that people still use today.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Mary on the line now in Fort Worth. Hi, Mary.
Hey, love the show, and I just wanted to comment about the big hair. I have a group of friends, and we have a game where we're tracking the dying breed of the big-haired women in Texas, and you get a point every time you see one, and we send a picture around, and we have a saying, the bigger the hair, the closer to Jesus.
That is a very well-known saying, and one that, yeah, is close to my heart as well.
If you would like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can send us a tweet at KERATHINK. Let's see. Let's go on the phones now to Mickey in Colleyville. Hey, Mickey.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, fixing Old English from Georgia, mostly, 13th Colony. It is proper English for getting ready or preparing to do something. So if you're fixing to go to bed, you're looking for your pajamas, or you're fixing to go to the store, you're hooking up the horse and buggy.
All right, so we're not using slang. Is that what you're telling us, Mickey?
It's not slang, no. It's old English. That can be called slang, but it came properly over with the Mayflower, I guess.
All right, great. Thank you so much for that. It is interesting the way language moves around. You will hear people say y'all who are not from Texas or from the South, but it's definitely, it's a signifier, isn't it? When you go somewhere and you hear someone say, especially if you use y'all like in the possessive form, you know, did y'all get y'all's suitcases and put them in the hallway? That only a Texan or a Southerner would say that.
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for that. And yes, I do love to use the possessive, and I'm very persnickety about where that apostrophe goes, you know, Y apostrophe A-L-L. And then if you add another apostrophe, S.
Right.
So it can be a little hard on the eyes when you're reading it, but it works wonders out of the mouth.
All right. Let's go to Bob in Dallas. Hi, Bob.
Hi. How's it going? Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm originally from California, and so when I moved to North Texas, it was quite a culture shock with all of the California you guys and and instead of y'all, and now it's y'all and y'alls and all y'all. And the one I haven't heard you guys mention, though, is Jeet Yet.
Oh, as in Jeet Yet, or do you want to go get a sandwich?
Exactly. That one was took me quite a while to figure that one out.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, compressing words is an economical way of talking.
I always wonder about people who, you know, English is not their first language. An expression like Jeet Yet, what could that possibly mean if you don't speak the language fluently?
Well, I mean, if you just come to it, then you'll know exactly what it means.
There you go. All right, let's go to the phone now and speak with Travis in Dallas. Hey, Travis.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, my call was about, you know, my post-college career before I got into the working world. You know, we took the European trip, and just the fact that you were a Texan opened many doors that you didn't get opened if you were a U.S. citizen. We were smart enough to take our cowboy boots with us, and you know, whenever we'd go, you know, hang out in public, it really allowed us to become more of a traveler than a tourist. People were more willing to open up, you know, hey, come over here, we're going to show you this, or, oh yeah, I'll take you back and show you a private tour of this castle, or just come hang out with me and my friends,
wow.
Because we were Texans and not because we were U.S. citizens.
Was that your parents' experience, Andrea?
Maybe not as much. I mean, like I said, you know, my mom said that she would say that, you know, she was from Texas, but I do have to say that my first trip, well, I had been to Mexico before, but my first big trip abroad was to Australia a couple of years ago, and me and my husband, you know, and I had all these dreams. You know, my mom would tell me that, you know, when she was out, you know, traveling, that she would say she was from Texas, and I thought, that's just so great. Like, you know, he was saying, the caller was saying, it does kind of feel like you become this, you know, kind of exotic person to somebody, and they automatically know who you are. And yeah, just being able to say that in Australia, like, I feel like it made me kindred to them already.
My guest is Andrea Valdez. She is editor of TexasMonthly.com and author of the new book, How to Be a Texan, The Manual. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send us a tweet at KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
That was Selena singing Como la Flor, and we are speaking this hour with TexasMonthly.com editor Andrea Valdez, author of How to Be a Texan, The Manual. You can join us at 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Andrea, what would go on the ultimate Texas mixtape? What kind of music? What artists?
Selena is definitely a big part of that. You had the Texas Tornadoes. Those mm-hmm. are both really good. Guy Clark, who recently passed
yeah.
away, would be another one. You know, Doug Somm, just kind of go back to the Texas Tornadoes. Willie Nelson, absolutely cannot have it without Willie. Waylon Jennings, you know, Willie, Waylon and the Boys. You know, so a lot of, you know, country and some Tex-Mex and singer-songwriters, you know, I think those are all part of it. And then, of course, you know, there's some great new rock that's coming out, as well, if that's your thing. But the classics, it's hard to go wrong.
It's really interesting that Austin has come to be associated with the old school music, as always. But now, you know, a lot of people want to go to South by Southwest and sort of, demonstrate their brand new music. And it's funny that this place in Central Texas is sort of a heartbeat for all kinds of music.
Yeah, so Austin is the live music capital of the world, and, you know, as you mentioned, it has South by Southwest and numerous other music festivals, ACL and Fun Fest is another one that's cropped up recently and had done really well here. So yeah, it's definitely, Willie Nelson is very much tied to, and the outlaw country music is very tied to Austin.
We have an email here from Guy who says, one of the things which I think northerners or northeastern U.S. transplants find most disturbing is when absolute strangers make eye contact and say, hi, good morning, or some other polite greeting. The southern manners heritage is strong in Texas, and acknowledgement of passersby, fellow sufferers waiting in line, and cohabitants in elevators is considered polite, if not necessary, behavior. The same goes, and you mentioned this in your book, for waving at oncoming traffic, especially if you are in the countryside on rural roads.
Yeah, the high sign is something that I think you see a lot out here. So it's typically this one finger wave. You kind of will lift as you have your hand on the wheel. You'll lift your index finger as an acknowledgement of someone who's coming toward you and passing you on the highway. So the friendliness extends beyond just a verbal hello.
Can you get away with that in like a Prius, or do you really have to have a big old Chevy truck?
I would hope that you could still do it in a Prius, but you might have, it might be, you're giving it to somebody in a big truck.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Rita on the line in Dallas. Hi, Rita.
Hi. I just have a quick comment, and it's just humor, and that is, how could you not mention chicken fried steak, which is the national food of Texas?
Huh.
Ah, that's a good one. And, you know, there are a lot of dishes that I did want to include and had to be selective. Chicken fried steak is certainly one of my favorites. But I liked the story, if I was going to do a fried chicken dish, well, not that chicken fried steak is chicken, obviously. But if I had to do a fried dish, I guess fried protein, I went with fried chicken because there's an origin story here in Texas that I really like out in... Oh my gosh, it's where Perini Ranch is, and I'm blanking on the name right now. But the origin story is that there was a little town out there that was going to elect a mayor. Was trying to get to be the county seat of the county, and the mayor supposedly had voted for a different town, Abilene specifically, to be the county seat. And so the town's patrons, as kind of revenge, went and, this is according to lore, killed his chickens and fried them all up as a dish. And in Perini Ranch, which is a restaurant out in Buffalo Gap, that's the name of the town, out in Buffalo Gap, they have an homage to that, and it's called, it's the judge's fried chicken dinner on Sundays, kind of as a way to sort of memorialize that. And it's just too good a story to pass up. And fried chicken is also very delicious. But I recognize that, yes, chicken fried steak is something that's very much a part of the small town cafe culture, especially.
All right. We have a tweet here to @KERAThink from Jack, who says, fourth generation Texan here. Love the show today. I've heard might would have is a direct translation from Czech. They have double modals. So maybe we borrowed that expression.
Well, there you go. That's really interesting.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the phones. We have Martha on the line in Grand Prairie. Hi, Martha.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I just had a funny story about fixin' to. I had a friend from D.C., and he called me one day. He was fascinated by the term fixin' to. And he called me one day and said, hey, I'm fixin' to come to see you. And I said, really? When are you going to get here? And he said, I'll be there in 3 weeks. And I said, no, you're not fixin' to. You'll be fixin' to when you're headed to the airport. Call me then.
There is some subtlety to using these things right, isn't there, Andrea?
Yeah, and that's a really great example of it.
All right, let's go to Doug in McKinney. Hey, Doug.
Hey there. Thanks for the great show today.
Oh, thank you.
I grew up in Houston, and I just, y'all had always just been a piece of my vocabulary, and then we lived for about 15 years up in the Midwest. And people would always just sort of look down their nose at me like we had somehow just done some violence to the human English language by, using the word y'all. But when we were in seminary, I had a brilliant Greek professor who had just this wonderful thick Texas accent, she would always use y'all in her biblical translations because there's a plural form of the word you. So like Jesus says, blessed are y'all. And it just made sense. And it was a huge vindication because we weren't doing violence to the English language. We were actually, you know, there's a plural form of the word you there that's represented that is lost in a lot of English. And it was kind of fun to see that, hey, we'd actually managed to find a good way to replicate that.
I love that. And I think I prefer to think about Jesus saying, blessed are y'all, than blessed are you guys. It just works better.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bumper sticker.
Thanks for your call, Doug. All right, let's go next on to Fort Worth and speak with Penny. Hi, Penny.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I just have to tell you, I'm sending out a lot of your books as Christmas gifts to people do not live in Texas. I wanted to know if you addressed the term tongue, where you
feel
something. Oh, good, because... I can't tell you how many times I have told a child, you're fixing to thump that over. And no one outside of Texas that I know ever uses it.
That's one of my favorites as well. And yeah, that's another one courtesy of my husband, who's from West Texas, I should say. I feel as though he was a really large part of my research. Just listening to him talk, I was able to write down basically every third word and put it in the book.
It really is the ultimate Texas warning, isn't it? You're fixing to tump that over.
Yeah, it doesn't get, I mean, y'all, you're fixing to tump that over. That might be the only way you could improve upon it.
Okay, let's go to Sharon in Dallas. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, this is a great program. Enjoying it. I just wanted to add another comment to the gentleman who was talking about mentioning that he was a Texan while he was traveling abroad. I found in traveling in Mexico and Latin America that when asked where I'm from, a response of por nacimiento norteamericana, pero por gracia de Dios, Tejana, will should really blow doors open. Everybody is very amused. And it's kind of like you said, we sort of travel on a separate kind of passport as Texans, because of the mythology of the state. So everybody's full of questions, the ice is broken, so on and so forth.
You agree with that, Andrea?
Yeah, I think it's really recognizable. I think there was some sort of informal study, one of these internet studies that was done in the last year or two, you know, asking people if they could identify Texas on a map, you know, people outside of the United States, and it people can. I mean, it's very distinct. The state of the shape is distinct. The place is distinct. People know it. You know, it has an X in it, so that I think helps. There's something nice about that. It's just, it's unique in a few ways.
Why is Bear County pronounced Bear County?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I'm ashamed to say, but I can tell you the first time that I heard it, I remember I was probably about 18 or 19, and I had moved from Houston to Austin, and you know, had like learned that San Antonio was in Bear County, and I was telling my dad that it was in Bexar County, and he was like Bear, and I was like Bexar, and he was like Bear, and Bexar. And he said, no, you're saying it wrong. It's Bear.
It looks like Bexar sounds like Bear.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let's talk now to Madison in Dallas. Hey, Madison.
Hi, how are y'all?
Very well.
I am so excited about reading this book because I moved to Dallas about 2 years ago from South Carolina and have been confused pretty much ever since. So I'm super excited to read. I also just wanted to ask a quick question. Being from South Carolina, obviously, I'm a true Southerner. I believe in, you know, all the values of the South and was raised to believe that Texas was absolutely not part of the South. So is it all of Texas that identifies as part of those, you know, part of that Southern culture, or is it only some parts of Texas that identify as that? I just want to make sure that I'm correct whenever I speak about Texas and, you know, when I go home and people mock me for saying that I still live in the South. So
I don't know. Are we the South, Andrea?
That's a really interesting question and one that's a little fraught. And so, you know, I don't want to weigh in too hard here. But, you know, there's a question as to whether the Texas is, you know, the South, the West, or completely separate. And I think a lot of people would argue that it's neither of those things and both of those things. You know, it has a lot, you know, of influence from the South and the West. But we're, you know, neither part of the South, I wouldn't believe, or part of the West. We're kind of our own place.
And within Texas, we have so many different regions that feel distinct from one another.
That's absolutely right. You know, we often at Texas Monthly think of it as, you know, if Texas is, you know, a city, then the regions and cities within it are its neighborhoods. You know, it's something that we think about a lot. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, something that it, you know, Beaumont is probably a different, is, you know, feels like a different place than El Paso, and Houston feels like a different city than Dallas. And yet the unifying thread is that we are all Texan.
Some publications imagine for themselves, you know, the stylized ideal reader, you know, and maybe it's a demographic category. Do you do that? Do y'all do that at Texas Monthly?
Well, kind of to get back to what I was saying about, you know, these different regions, you know, as an editor there, the way that I think about stories when I'm assigning them is, does this story that is, you know, taking place in Houston, is it going to interest somebody who lives in, you know, Tyler, Texas? And, you know, so it, and the answer is not always going to be a firm yes, but the thing is that there are certain stories and ideas behind stories that kind of transcend, you know, the very specific location and really talk more about the Texas mentality or the Texas spirit in general. And so we try and tap into that when we can.
All right. Let's talk now to Paul in Dallas. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thanks.
I have lived in a bunch of different places, raised in four different places in the Northeast, in North Carolina for many years, and over in Europe and in the military. But easily, I've now been in Texas 40 years, and easily the most difficult culture shock I ever went through was when I moved to Texas. And it took me a long time to recover. And one of the things that helped me to get over it and understand what I was dealing with was volume one of Robert Caro's biography of LBJ. Huh. It gives so much of the history and the feel that I was able to really kind of get what was happening.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Yeah.
And then if you don't feel like reading volume two, you can pick up Andrea's book. Where would you go if you had a weekend free to spend in Texas?
I am partial to Big Bend. You know, I was out there just last year doing the Window Trail, which is something that I mentioned in the book as, you know, if you wanted to travel like a Texan or tour like a Texan, to go do the Window Trail is one of the most popular trails out in Big Bend. But I also love to go home to Houston. You know, Houston has changed so radically since I left, and, you know, it's really wonderful to go to a place where you have a lot of childhood nostalgia and kind of revisit it as an adult, and you see it through a different lens. I don't want to play favorites. I like to visit all parts of Texas. You know, it's every time I get out of my, you know, get out of here, get out of my little world, my bubble, you know, I just feel inspired driving around the state and driving on the farm to market roads.
How important is swagger to be a Texan?
I think that it's important, and to employ it at the right time when it feels appropriate. But when you put on certain parts of the, you know, I guess the kind of the Texas costume, for lack of a better word, it's hard not to feel like swaggering when you have boots and spurs on.
Andrea Valdez is editor of TexasMonthly.com and author of the new book, How to Be a Texan, The Manual. Andrea, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Samantha Guzman is associate producer, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's Twitter account is now at KERA Think, and you can contact us via email to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.